All right, well, thanks. Like you said, I'm from Kansas State University. I used to be on faculty at Mississippi State, so I kind of got my interest in cotton. So you guys might not normally think as Kansas is a big cotton state, and I guess really we aren't. If you look at our acres of the different crops, you know, we're still a traditional wheat state in the country, probably one of the bigger wheat states. But you can see our wheat acres have been going down quite a bit, and if you look at our budgets for 2018, I don't see much encouragement for planting any more wheat this coming year. So I really foresee a point where wheat is actually not our dominant crop in the state anymore. I think soybeans is probably going to overtake that in a couple of years if the current price thing stays the same. Now, you know, that's kind of a hard thing to say in Kansas where we think of everybody as being wheat, but it certainly gives some more opportunities to other crops. If you look at our soybean budgets, they're not all that great either, but at least we're kind of breaking even. The wheat budgets, it's almost to the point where we're hardly covering variable cost. Well, where does cotton fit in everything? And cotton is kind of this blue line way down here, so it's not a whole lot of cotton in the state. But I think we are becoming more of a cotton state, because if you look at our cotton acres, we have really jumped up here over the last 10 or 15 years. So now we're growing over, last year we grew over 100,000 acres of cotton in the state. And I kind of see that going forward. That could be more of an issue here. Once we get the whole herbicide-resistant cotton thing kind of figured out, that's kind of been one of the barriers holding cotton back. And we suffer a lot of 2,4-D damage from the cotton. So once we get that figured out. And the other issue, too, is for someone who's looking to grow cotton, you know, it's kind of a big investment in the different machinery and stuff that it would actually take to grow the product here. So, you know, if you actually want to buy your own harvester, really you probably need to be growing, you know, probably several thousand acres to justify that. And for someone in Kansas who's growing mainly corn, soybeans, and wheat to suddenly, you know, decide they're going to grow cotton, that's kind of a big shift here. So we got to figure out some of the issues about machinery and that kind of stuff, I think, for this to really take forward. But one of the other issues about why cotton, I think, is becoming more of an issue here is that certainly you guys are familiar with the aquifer situation, the plains. Kansas is at kind of the forefront of that, because we're certainly seeing our well depths get a lot deeper and getting harder to get water come out. And as a response to that, our farmers have taken the initiative to basically set up these LEMAs in the state, where basically they voluntarily set up a guidelines for how much water you can draw out. And I think that's going to be more and more important as we go forward. I'm not sure how many of these LEMAs are actually functioning. I think this was one of the first ones. But basically, they have restricted themselves to drawing 55 inches of water over 5 years. Now, the nice thing about that is, and I think it leads to some interesting economic questions, is how do you allocate the water? Do you want to use the same amount every year? Or maybe you want to save your water and use a lot of water 1 year, whereas you use less the other year. So there's some interesting questions there. But if you look at our budgets, we revised the amount of irrigation water because we've been determining that farmers have been getting a little more efficient with their with the way they use water. So typically in Kansas, our major irrigated crop would be corn. We got about a quarter of our corn acres that are actually irrigated. Our old budgets had about 15 to 18 inches of water for corn, and we've since revised those down to about 12 or 15 inches. But if you're looking at even at the lower rate of that for corn, at 12 inches per year, and if you do that for 5 years, you're already talking 60 inches of water here. So these LEMAs, if the current setup of 55 inches, that really means you're not going to be able to fully irrigate your corn unless you skip a year of irrigating corn. So the Kansas cotton growers came to me a couple years ago, and I forgot to thank them for funding for this project here, Kansas cotton growers. They suggested that maybe we look at irrigated cotton, because cotton, based on what they've been telling me, is a more efficient use of water, that you can actually get a pretty good crop without near amount of the water that it would take to grow corn. So that's what we've been looking at, is how much cotton can you get for an inch of water when you apply it versus what some of the other crops are. I think I just told you guys that. What's the value of an inch of water? So basically, we had two approaches here. Our first approach was basically to go out and do a formal survey of Kansas cotton growers and look at actually how much irrigation water they're using. Now, again, it's going to be a pretty small sample because, you know, again, there's not much cotton to start with, and there's even less irrigated cotton here. But we did employ one of our retired KFMA economists for this. He went out, and he was actually doing most of our cotton work before he retired, so he was a good person to use for this. And he found, I think, most of the people who were growing the irrigated cotton and basically did a survey about how much water you were applying and how much the yields were doing. To do this, and then second approach was basically we did a dry land study, looked at what the cotton yields have been on different acres across not only Kansas, but really Texas and Oklahoma as well, and looked at how yields of cotton have varied based on what the yield has, rainfall has varied. So we basically set a baseline for the amount of yield for dry land cotton that you would get in a normal year, and then look at years where you got more rain than normal, and assume that could be a proxy for irrigation, and just to see what that did for the non-irrigated yields. Basically, for both these approaches, though, we compared it to a baseline where we looked at what would happen in a typical year without any irrigation water. So basically, we're looking at kind of a normal dry land year. What's the yield for that? That's of our baseline. Then we're going to look at what the extra water does as far as the increase in yield you might expect. All right, so for the survey that we did, Kent Miller, who did this for us, he basically surveyed producers over a two-year time span. To get more years' worth of data, he actually asked the producers what some of their yields were in previous years. So basically, we got about 5 years of responses from these producers here. It was a very different set of years over those five-year periods. So the first 2 years that he asked data for, 11 and 12, were really, really dry. I mean, very, very severe droughts in our state. Whereas the other 3 years were actually probably above normal participation. So we got a good range of how much moisture they actually got. Basically, we determined that in a typical year, they would apply almost 9 inches of irrigation water, but that ranged quite a bit depending on what the year was, from basically 6 to 17 inches. But for the most part, they were pretty consistent in the amount of total water that was applied to a cotton crop. So when you figure the irrigation water on top of the rainfall, it turned out to be about 24 inches almost, again, with a range of probably about 21 to 26. I say it's, you know, this part of Kansas is dry, but it's certainly probably not as dry as western Texas here. So on average, the rainfall that we get during the summer in Pratt County, which was our main county, was about 15 inches on average, and that's not counting the rain they would get during the rest of the year. Now, one thing with the yields, though, that we had to ask was, we know in Kansas we don't have the restrictions on 2,4-D and other chemicals here when we're growing cotton. So a lot of our cotton up till now has basically seen some damage from the herbicide drift. So we basically had to ask producers the question, not only what your yields were, but what were your yields would be if you didn't get any herbicide damage here. So there was a little bit of speculation there on the producer's part. But I think that's pretty common here. I think most producers were fairly confident we could get about 1,400 pounds in most years from irrigated cotton here. For the dry land yields, we just basically used the NASH yields for Pratt County. Now, it turns out that looking at the NASH data for those 5 years, I got about an average of 881 pounds for dry land cotton, which makes me question a little bit about the NASH data, because I'm not really for sure our dry land cotton yields are actually that high. If you guys have ever worked with NASH data, I think there's some questions about whether they actually get their dry land and irrigated yields actually in the proper categories. I mean, if you go back and look at our western Kansas soybean yields for dryland soybeans, they're really high, which I think that what they're actually getting is, I think they're actually getting the irrigated soybean yields in with that dryland stuff, so it kind of throws out the numbers here. So I'm not always sure NASH surveys actually correctly get whether something is dryland versus irrigated. But anyway, just based on what the NASH data shows, they're showing about 881 pounds of dryland cotton yields for that county. Again, looking at our irrigated yields, we had about 1,400 pounds. So basically, we determined that the yield increase due to irrigation water was 488 pounds, which to me is probably at the low end. I looked at another county which I thought had more typical cotton yields for that part of Kansas here. I looked at Sumner County as a baseline. Their yields were a lot lower because I don't think they had – I think those were probably true non-irrigated yields. And if we use that as our baseline and compare it to what the irrigated yields would be from Pratt County, again, I'm mixing counties here. Now we're looking at maybe a potential maybe of almost 900 pounds due to irrigation water here. So if you go back and convert that to a per inch of water here, I think it's reasonable to expect that from irrigation water, we could probably get from 55 to almost 100 pounds of cotton per inch of water, which would actually match up with the last reporter in one of the papers from yesterday afternoon where they were showing about 100 to 105, 110-pound increase. Okay, that's the survey part, and here's what the results look like. I basically have the green is the pounds of cotton that we were getting, so here's our reported cotton yields every year. The purple is the amount of water. Again, this would be irrigation water and rainfall, so here's the amount of water applied in the purple. And then this green line down here, this would be the baseline non-irrigated dry land cotton yields for Pratt County. You can see there's a fairly strong trend line here. I'm not really sure cotton yields are increasing that much. Again, I think there may be some irrigation water kind of showing up in some of these dry land cotton yields down here. So here's basically the increase that we would get from the baseline dry land versus what the irrigated yields are up here. All right, so for the secondary study then, I was looking at, basically took every county in Kansas, Texas, and Oklahoma and checked it for cotton production. Again, I'm using NAS data for this. And I looked at the past 30 years, and I kept in my study then any county that had 10 years of cotton yields during that past 30 years. Again, since I'm looking at how rainfall as a proxy for irrigation would affect yields, then I'm only looking at the non-irrigated cotton yields for these counties. And then I'm using PRISM weather data as my source of rainfall. Now, again, PRISM weather data, like all the other weather data sources you can get out there, it's almost always repackaged NOAA weather data here. So basically, it's NOAA data, but PRISM packages it up in their little package that luckily they don't charge for their weather data. Then we established a baseline yield through regression. So basically, I was looking at what is our dry land yield as a function of the year. And again, we expect a little bit of trend line in yields there probably. And then we're going to record the yearly differences from what the trend line year was. So I basically, for every year we had cotton, I'm going to look at what the actual yield in that year was versus what the trend line yield was and record the difference. Do the same thing for rainfall. Now with rainfall, I'm not seeing any increase in the rainfall from year to year here. So basically over 30 years, the rainfall has been pretty consistent. And again, I'm only looking for the years, for the months May through September. What I'm doing now in this one, instead of looking at the total rainfall over the summer, I'm actually looking at rainfall differences by month over that time frame. So I established my trend line rainfall over that time frame from May through September for each month, and I'm looking at differences above or below that trend line in each of those counties, in each of those months, in each of those years. And then we take a regression model where we look at our yield above normal versus what the rainfall variations was. So basically, if we have a month where the rainfall is above normal, that could be a proxy for maybe they applied for applying irrigation water. But instead of irrigating, we're actually getting higher rainfall, higher moisture through higher rainfall amounts here. And again, I'm only looking at the months May through September. My other question was, okay, in some years, you know, we're going to go into the year in a different soil moisture situation than we would be in other cases. So I also included the Palmer Drought Index in there in the regression, too. Although I don't think that really showed me much, but it was my idea of getting out to the fact that, in a dry year, maybe you went into the year kind of wet, so that might help things out. In the other case, you might go into a year fairly dry, but then get a fair amount of moisture during the summer here. So to account for those differences, we use the Palmer Drought Index for that. So when I did this final regression of looking at the amount of yield above normal versus the rainfall amounts in each of the months, I grouped all the counties into the crop reporting district, although I actually did monthly variations based on the monthly averages and trend lines here. So I'm using that as my starting point. But then when I run my final regression, then I'm using the counties grouped in a crop reporting district. So this, as you might imagine, this leads to some very messy results here, and I got some different results based on what crop reporting district I would actually look at. So I'm not saying there's a whole lot of things to that I can see for definite conclusions here, but here's was one of the crop reporting districts that probably had the highest R square. This had an R square of 0.43%. And the adjusted one was 20%. This was my best result here. But you can see how this would vary here. So I'm not really getting any definite trends here, except that if you look at July, if we applied an extra inch of water in July, we got about 42 pounds of more cotton in this particular month here. And again, I'm not seeing any consistency among my crop reporting districts. I'm right now looking at better ways of maybe analyzing this econometrically. So basically, based on the two parts of my survey here, my survey part of it in Pratt County, I'm seeing basically probably from 55 to 100 pounds of extra cotton yields from an inch of water here. from my secondary data, looking at just the dry land irrigation and regular water, I'm seeing yield increases from 40 to 66 pounds if I would translate that extra moisture into cotton yields. Again, this is probably low, though, because, you know, the extra rainfall may occur at times you really don't need it and vice versa here. So I would say this estimate is probably low, which if we would adjust for that, then I think I'm probably looking at probably 60 to 100 pounds of extra cotton for an inch of water, which actually what I think would agree again with that paper that we saw yesterday. So, yeah, I think there is a future for irrigated cotton in Kansas. Again, I don't know how quickly it's going to ramp up, but certainly based on what the crop prices are, I think it's going to be could be a very good crop for Kansas. Questions? Yes. Yes, most of it, huh?
Is there any consideration in going into subsurface drip?
We're doing some of that, yeah. So certainly the technology is going to affect things in the Kansas as well here. So, you know, producers are already with the restrictions on water are looking at ways to get more efficient with their water things. So even with corn production, looking at ways to really extend that water base as much as they can. Yeah, we're getting there. I think now for most of our irrigated crop budgets for corn in the state of Kansas, we put down about 240 bushels per acre for what we expect that you can get for irrigated corn. And they're doing that probably with 12 to 15 inches of water here. So, yeah, they're making pretty good use of water in Kansas. Certainly we have to with the water situation. Yeah, yeah. And with these new herb, you know, with same thing with cotton, too, I think you're seeing some improvements there as well, so. Yeah.
Especially in a small county where any amount of overlap will really distort the.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't realize there was that much slop in the data until I actually started looking at the irrigated and non-irrigated stuff. So. Yeah.
Well, you can have a really weird year like we did this year when my husband's dry land yield outperformed his irrigated. So. It could happen.
It can happen. Yeah. And especially if you've got a small sample.
Yeah.
But the RMA data will be based on.
That's true. Yeah, you're right. Okay. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Well, the county average yields, I think, are publicly available on the website. I mean, on the website. Individual stuff. Yeah. If you want to run a sample of producers, you'd have to get on the information. But I think the county average stuff is online.
Yeah, it's not quite as easy to use as quick stats, but.
Right, yeah. Yeah, you'd have to do some data.
Yeah. No, in fact, I was I'm trying to maybe pitch this proposal to the corn growers to see if they want to contribute some money toward this too here, because you know, if I want to put a grad student on doing something like this, suddenly we need to come up with some money for that here. So that to me, that would be the next logical step. If you guys in Kansas could get all the different grower associations together and pony up some money, we can probably look at all the crops together. Yes. Yeah. Well, certainly, it's certainly better when you look at it compared to wheat, for sure. So, yeah, so. No, I don't think so either, because they're getting all the water right now. So yeah, so why?
Yeah. it's about a 4-to-1 ratio on cotton versus corn, basically because of the employment in the infrastructure. So if you have a cotton infrastructure, it employs more people locally than the corn infrastructure does. Not that they're not profitable. I mean, you know, the producer's concerned whichever one makes the most money is the one they're going to grow. But certainly, I think. Growth of a cotton infrastructure in Kansas would probably contribute more to economic output than growth of a corn infrastructure.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right. Well, thanks. Save the